This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What I'd like to have right now is for all you fat, out of shape, SummerSlam sweat hogs.
You like that?
He's talking to you, Shimani.
Keep the noise down while I take my robe off and show the ladies what a real sexy man looks like.
You goddamn right. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to the continuing series of Pod Blasts as we continue to give you candidates for Place to Be Nation's top 100 WWE superstars of all time. I am Scott Criscolo. To my right, Jason Greenhouse. We all know who that was. And this one, you're going to hear some passion in the voice of myself and Mr. Greenhouse, because to us, this is a guy who, in my opinion, particularly his WWF career, gets consistently disrespected as not only a great in-ring worker, but one of the greatest characters in the history of the business. And that is indeed Ravishing Rick Rude. The guy had it. He had everything. He had good looks, the long black hair, the awesome-looking airbrush tights, the incredible physique, the Jesse the Body Award, the sweet abs, the continued insulting of sweaty, fat East Coast wrestling fans, the two of us not included, and he's talking to you, Shivani. The guy just got it, Greeny. Fucking guy just got it. Pure and simple. I mean, we'll obviously delve more into that, but the guy just got it.
He sure did, and like I said on a previous installment of one of our pod blasts, I was always a heel guy, and much like I discussed about Paul Orndorff, man, Rick Rude, the second he came in the WWF in the fall of 1987, I just fell in love with this guy. He had everything. He had that hair. He had that mustache. He had that smug look on him. You put him with Bobby Heenan, and bam, just the perfect package from the second he came into the company. A guy who worked heel his entire stint in the WWF. Now, there's other promotions where he ended up getting a little bit higher gold around his waist, but he's a former Intercontinental Champion who, when you think of guys who deserve to have the Intercontinental title, you're going to think of Randy Savage. You're going to think of Mr. Perfect. You're going to think of Bret Hart. And you're going to think of Ravishing Rick Rude. There's so many things that he did in the ring, on the mic, just nonverbal stuff that he did, blowing kisses at the camera. Everything he did meant something. That's something that a lot of wrestlers don't have today. Make everything that you do count. Make everything that you do have a purpose. And Rick Rude did that every single time. Whether he was cutting a promo with Bobby, and Bobby was doing the talking, Rude was always making obscene gestures with his lips and just absorbing all the heel heat that he had from the crowd. Everything that he did was awesome. Some of the matches that he had, not his best work as far as his career goes, but Rude was a guy who you could put in the ring with anybody in the WWF, and he got a good match out of them, and they got a good match out of him. Of course, starting out in 1987, he was brought in. He didn't even have vignettes. He was brought in, I believe it was a 6 or an 8-man tag involving the Heenan family. And Bobby introduced Rick Rude as the newest member of the Heenan family, along with Hercules and Harley Race. And off we went. Rude, right away, his very first pay-per-view in the WWF, was involved in the main event, which was the 10-man main event at the first Survivor Series, being on that awesome heel team, along with the One Man Gang, and Andre the Giant, and others. So right away, Rude meant something to the company. And of course, after Survivor Series, he didn't really have a big feud for the first part of 88. He was floating around the house show circuits, feuding with guys like Coco Beware, who he actually, there's some good matches on some primetime wrestling on WWE Network with Coco and with Rude. Guys like Rude, guys like Tito, guys like Martel when Strikeforce would break up into singles matches sometimes. And then, of course, the first major feud that he was involved in with Jake the Snake Roberts in the mid part of 1988. I mean, this is how big of a heel he was. He did things right. The man tried to kiss another man's wife. When they brought Cheryl Roberts in to kind of look after Jake, because Jake was kind of falling off the tracks a little bit, and the only person that can kind of keep him balanced was his wife. So she started going on the road with Jake, and they put her into an angle where Rude would scout women out of the crowd to receive his Rude Awakening kiss. And of course, the woman who he seeks out of the crowd happens to be Cheryl Roberts. And he also just doesn't want to kiss another man's wife. He grabs her by the wrist. This is something you will never see on WWE TV in 2017. On top of that, he wears airbrush tights with the man's wife on them. That is heel heat right there. From there, the feud with Jake transitioned into the high-profiled intercontinental feud with the Ultimate Warrior, having their pose down at the Royal Rumble, in which Rude would attack Warrior, and that would lead to the Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania 5, where Rude would win the Intercontinental title, would hold on to it until SummerSlam, and the clip that we heard at the opening was the introduction that he gave to the Meadowlands crowd at SummerSlam 89. And Warrior would lose. Warrior would regain the Intercontinental title from Rude with some distraction from Rowdy Piper, which would be Rude's next feud and my favorite Rick Rude feud in his WWE era. Both guys who can cut excellent promos, and they did. They had two Madison Square Garden matches. One was just a flat-out brawl, and the other was a cage match, which I believe was in November or December. Actually, yes, December, right after the holidays in 1989. And, of course, Rude and Piper would captain their respective teams at Survivor Series 89 with Rowdy's Roddies against Rude's Brood. So after the feud with Piper, Rude didn't have a high-profile match at WrestleMania where he worked against Jimmy Snuka, but that was getting him ready for a WWF title match against the new champion, the Ultimate Warrior, at SummerSlam 90. Now, there's a bunch of heels in this era that could have tried to get a good match out of the Warrior in this cage match. You had Randy Savage. You had Ted DiBiase and a few others, but they were involved in other feuds. But Vince thought so highly of Rude for him to main event a pay-per-view that he put him in the slot to main event the cage match against Warrior at SummerSlam 90. And unfortunately, Rude did not come out as the WWF champion. And soon after that, Rude would leave the company. But that's pretty much a three-year stint that he had in WWE from summertime in 87 until summertime, early fall into 1990. And Rude is another guy who didn't need a belt. He did have Bobby Heenan as his manager, because pretty much every heel at the time had a manager. That was a Vince thing. He had to put a manager with them. But when you think of the quintessential Bobby Heenan guys, along with Mr. Perfect and Harley Race, Ravishing Rick Rude as well, is just a Bobby Heenan guy. And those two had such great on-screen chemistry. But yeah, Rude's matches, definitely check out the WrestleMania 5 match, of course, with the Warrior, the SummerSlam 89 match with the Warrior, even the Survivor Series match in 89 with the 4-on-4 teams was good. The cage match, of course, my favorite Rude match in his stint is the Garden match. I believe it's December 26th or 29th of 89 at the Garden. Just do a search for it on YouTube, and I'm sure it'll pop up somewhere. But Rick Rude is a guy who was a workhorse every night. He had pure heel heat, got booed every time he came out. He never had a feud with Hogan. There was a couple of house shows that they worked together, I think Boston Garden and a few other markets. They never worked the Garden, but they did work Boston together. I don't know if it was Hogan playing politics that he didn't want to work Rude because Rude was so good. Who knows? But I think Rude and Hogan would have had a really good feud just for a couple of months. Maybe in late 89 into 90 before Hogan was getting ready for Warrior and right after the Rude and Piper feud. But as far as where Rude belongs on here, now, like I said, he would go on to WCW, of course, and have a stable revolved around him, where in WWF he was kind of the 1A of the stable, because Bobby always had Perfect, and he had Andre, guys who were a little bit higher than Rude on the card. But Rude brought his, like I said, he brought his A game every night. One of the top heels in that 3-year span. Maybe at one point the number two heel in the company, next to Ted DiBiase or next to Randy Savage in 89. Rude's a guy who, because he did have better things and better matches down the road, I want to put Rude somewhere in the 60s here. He's a guy who, if he had more main event matches and would have had a little bit longer run, I think I would have put him higher. And there's guys who definitely belong higher than he does. But the work that he did in 3 years definitely speaks for itself.
And for those that I looked it up, it is December 28th, 1989, okay, is the Rude Piper cage match, complete with brass knucks and everything, because, you know, those two guys get it, you know. What it is about Rick Rude is the ability to work a crowd. I think that is one of the, when we're going through all these candidacies, Greeny, I think the key thing beyond, you know, the base promo and beyond the matches and the work rate, working the crowd, because they're the ones that ultimately pay the tickets. And another guy that's a candidate, he's obviously in, where you put him is up to you, that knew how to work a crowd better than anybody, is the Macho Man Randy Savage. And believe me, there will be a pod blast on him. But there's just guys who get crowds. And no one, there's not many that could get a crowd better than Rick Rude. And that was a talent that, for the most part, had to be worked out by heels. Baby faces are easy to work because you're already getting cheered. But it takes a lot. And this is why heels historically have to work harder than baby faces. It takes a lot to really piss a crowd off. And at that stretch, from 87 to 90, nobody did it better than Rick Rude. Rude almost would pass the torch on to Mr. Perfect after WrestleMania 6 when they did the Intercontinental title tournament. Perfect won it, and Rude kind of, yeah, he got the title match at SummerSlam 90, but by then he had kind of taken a dip down, and Perfect had become the top heel. But that 88 through 90 run, it is criminal that we never got a Hogan-Rude world title match. Criminal! But again, and it sucks, but it's fact, so many great heels, not enough title shots to go around. It's unfortunate, Some people may disagree with that assessment. That's great. The more debate, the better. That's what makes it fun. For me, though, there just was not enough title shots to go around. Now, a lot of people could contend that the Zeus feud took up a lot of room, and maybe it did, but we're not going to sit here and debate pay-per-views because I'll contend that SummerSlam 89 is one of the greatest pay-per-views ever. And maybe that's the one drawback of Rick Rude, is that he didn't get enough legitimate title shots. But that's not a crime, and that's not his fault. He was given a lot of room to maneuver. And like Greeny said, it is very difficult to really get stellar matches out of a guy like the Ultimate Warrior, who had such a limited moveset and moved very stiffly and had that kind of, the way he moved in the ring was similar to what Undertaker would be like later on down the line. But he just knew, as you heard in the beginning, he knew how to torque the crowd. He knew how to get guys going, and he knew how to get the crowd going. And I remember many a house show at my beloved New Haven Coliseum, and I know, Greeny, you saw many a house show in Poughkeepsie, where you wanted to go into the crowd and punch him in the face. Or you just laughed at the fat guy that was six seats over that they was talking to him. But Rude just got it. And maybe we can stretch it out. His work rate didn't shine until he went to WCW. Another discussion for another day. So maybe we didn't get as good an in-ring template of how amazing he was in the ring in the WWF that we saw later on when he went to WCW. But sometimes, again, and Hogan has said it in interviews, and you almost want to irritate, you know, you just want to punch him in the face. It's not always about being in the ring. It's everything else around it. And in some cases, that is the truth. But as you heard in that opening piece, and all the times he was on Superstars, Challenge, and pay-per-views, Rick Rude knew how to get a crowd ready to crucify him. I mean, one sentence says it all. He put, forget the belts, forget opponents' faces. He airbrushed a guy's wife on his junk. End of story. Well, on the junk side of his tights, obviously. That's really what it comes down to. Just got it. Greeny, any final thoughts?
Yeah, Rude's one of those guys who, if you look at that era, the cartoon era, the 87 to 91 time frame, you had a lot of guys screaming into the camera whenever they cut promos. Savage, Hogan, a lot of people, Warrior, of course. Rude took his time saying what he wanted to say. The slower he went, the more people got pissed off at him. It's something that Kevin Owens does very well today. He takes his time saying stuff. The slower he goes, the more people he's going to piss off. And that's what Rick Rude had. People talk about ring psychology. There's also promo psychology, and that was very good promo psychology. He didn't need to yell. All he needed to do was get into a ring and say, cut the music, and it was game on.
Yeah, like you said. And then we didn't get to play it because Shivani, thanks Shivani, cut him off when he said, hit the music. So there you go, Rick Rude. Think very long and hard. Where would you put him? Now, in our past blasts that you and I have done, we had Adonis in the 60s. You had Orndorff in the 40s. Let me ask you, do you have him higher at the moment? And I know you have plenty of time to hammer it out. Do you have him at the moment higher or lower than Orndorff on your list?
I am going to have him lower than Orndorff, but higher than Adonis. Like I said, his best ring work would come later on in his career, mainly because he had better guys to work with. It wasn't his fault in WWF that he didn't have better guys to work with, but we are just grading him on his WWE work, so we're going to have to go with what we work.
Exactly. And I'm not sure where at the moment I have Rick Rude, but he will I think he'll probably be in my top 50. He may even be in my in the 30s. We'll see. Thank you again for joining us for yet another Pod Blast celebrating a candidacy for Place to Be Nation's Top 100 WWE Superstars of all time. Stay at placetobenation.com. These are all over the place in terms of different candidates, different discussions, pros, cons of all sorts of guys. So, for Jason Greenhouse, I'm Scott Criscolo. Enjoy and research.